This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
there are credible reports that both sides are massing troops close to this strategic town.
That's E.J. Hoogendoorn, Deputy Program Director for Africa at the International Crisis Group, talking about tensions rising in northern Somalia. Details coming up also. French President Macron is visiting Nigeria for talks on trade and to strategize on how to fight Boko Haram. And South African workplaces are failing to adequately transform and diversify in terms of gender and race. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, most of the international attention on Somalia has been focused on the southern part of the country, which suffered through a collapsed government, civil war, famine, and terror attacks. The situation has generally been more peaceful in the north, but there are concerns that a long simmering dispute between Somaliland and Puntland province could erupt into an all-out war and spread. E.J. Hoogendoorn, Deputy Program Director for Africa at the International Crisis Group, assesses the volatile situation with my colleague Paul Alexander.
Well, the tensions are still very high. As we'd reported, there are credible reports that both sides are massing troops close to this strategic town between or in contested areas between Puntland and Somaliland. This area has been contested for a long time between the two administrations, and we are calling for international mediation to try to tamp down these tensions, to have both sides withdraw their troops, and to negotiate a peaceful resolution to this crisis.
So what's at stake here for the overall situation in the Horn of Africa?
Well, what's at stake is that while people have spoken about Somalia being a failed state and conflict affected, the reality is a bit more complex than that. It's the fact is that the North has actually been relatively stable for quite some time, and we are worried that were conflict to break out in the North, it would, further destabilize Somalia. It would potentially create more space for al-Shabaab, this terrorist group that's been operating in the south, to grow in size and scope. And were al-Shabaab to grow in size and scope, it could destabilize not just Somalia, but the entire region.
So is al-Shabaab playing a role here in trying to instigate, and would they benefit from all-out war?
So al-Shabaab is not instigating this crisis. This is basically a crisis between Somaliland and Puntland over an area that they both claim. But the reality is that were a conflict to break out between these two administrations, then it would mean pressure would be taken off in the fight against al-Shabaab, and al-Shabaab most likely would be able to rebound and regroup and present an even greater threat to Somalia.
So what's the best approach to cool this off, and who should get involved?
Well, what we've asked is that the UN become involved as the main mediator, but that it be supported by both regional states and also the Somali federal government. And the idea is that the UN could play a neutral mediating role between Somaliland and Puntland and try to get both sides to sit down and talk through their grievances.
Do you see hesitation by the world community to get involved in Somalia after what happened in the early 90s?
Well, I would argue that international actors have been involved in Somalia since the country collapsed. As you and your readers, or as your listeners probably know, there is a very large peacekeeping mission that's operating in southern Somalia. The international community is spending billions trying to restore order to the country. What is to some degree troubling, and the reason why we've written this report, is that most of the international focus and attention has been on southern Somalia, in large part because, again, there has been relative peace between Somaliland and Puntland for quite some time, and it's getting difficult to try to get them to focus on the simmering conflict in the north. But we do believe it's important. Obviously, prevention is much better than trying to deal with the situation were full-scale conflict to break out.
That was E.J. Hoogendoorn, Deputy Program Director for Africa at the International Crisis Group, speaking with my colleague, Paul Alexander. Villagers in central Somalia say they refused al-Shabaab's demand to give up young children to become fighters for the extremist group, sparking clashes today that killed 10 militants and 5 villagers. The fighting took place in the village of Ad, 55 kilometers northwest of Harardere. A resident of the village told VOA Somali that the militants came to local elders 2 days ago saying they wanted the youngsters and livestock. Speaking on conditions of anonymity, he said the villagers organized themselves to resist. The villager said al-Shabaab has taken control of the area and that armed residents are in the nearby village of El Abdi. Al-Shabaab claims its fighters were defending the village from an attack by regional forces. Thousands of investors, traders, entrepreneurs, business leaders, and key economic players from around the world recently participated in the 2018 Africa Trade and Investment Global Summit in Washington, D.C. One coffee producer at the event says he's looking to expand his business while creating awareness of the world refugee crisis. Manyang Kerr is founder and director of 734 Coffee. He says 734 represents the geographical coordinates for Gambela, a region in Ethiopia where over 200,000 South Sudanese citizens have taken refuge. Proceeds from his business go towards establishing farms, providing water and other means for the refugees to live a meaningful life. He spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about why it was important for him to participate in the conference.
Because I want to connect with the many part of people of Africa. This is a connection network, and we want to also do business. I think this is one of the great things to be here, because people who are here want to do business.
Tell me about your business. What are you doing right now with your business?
What I'm doing, I sell the best coffee there is to the mankind, and it's called 734. And if you don't believe it, just try it. It's called 734.
I tried it, and I think it's very good.
That's it. That's it right there.
And as far as growth, where would you like to see your company grow to, and in what way?
Well, if you sell the best coffee there is to the mankind, you want to also make it where the possible it can be, like, you know, this building, like the USID buildings, the World Trade Center. Make our own coffee shop in a big center where everyone come, and not just distribution channel, all those kind of things, you know, like, yeah, that's what we wanted.
And where do you grow your coffee?
Sudan and Ethiopia.
And from there, it is exported to the U.S.?
Here. We do Philadelphia and Maryland, so that's what the port they come through.
Do you sell any of it in Sudan or Ethiopia?
Yeah, of course, we can sell it. That's where I come from, motherland, right there. So we sell it right there. Right. This one is for everybody who want to try. I sell the best coffee there is to the mankind, so come and try it.
That was Banyang Kerr, founder and director of 734 Coffee. He spoke with Kim Lewis at the Africa Trade and Investment Global Summit in Washington. French President Macron is mixing official meetings with culture in Nigeria, the second leg of his visit to boost ties with Africa. Macron is familiar with Abuja, Nigeria, after spending 6 months at the French embassy there as an intern when he was 23. After arriving Tuesday, he met with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari for talks on trade and strategy in fighting the violent Boko Haram group. The French leader signed a $475 million agreement to fund projects in three Nigerian states and vowed to maintain France's presence in the Sahel as long as necessary to help pressure extremists. Then it was off to the New Africa Shrine that was founded by the late music legend Fela Kuti. Macron played a drum to the delight of the crowd, though the usual scantily clad dancers and haze of marijuana smoke were absent for the night. Nigerian police say they have arrested four suspected members of the Yan Sakai vigilante group in connection with the slayings of 41 men in a forest known as a hideout for criminal gangs. 23 bodies were found in the forest in Zamfara State on Friday, with another 18 discovered in a river Sunday. Some had their throats slashed while others had been shot. Police say a search of the nearby area led to the arrests and the confiscation of guns and machetes. The state has been hit hard by clashes between cattle rustlers and vigilante groups that have formed to fight back. The government dispatched troops there in April in an effort to bring the spiraling violence under control. With less than 4 weeks go before Zimbabwe's July 30th elections, the main opposition alliance is accusing the Electoral Commission of bias towards the ruling ZANU-PF party. Reporter Kuzai Zenwashi has more details.
Nelson Chamisa is the presidential candidate for the main coalition, MDC Alliance. He has a list of issues about the elections.
The voter roll that has been released is not fit for purpose. It is not legally compliant. It cannot be credibly used to record the conduct of the voting process. It cannot be used to be able to forensically audit the process on our own.
Chamisa adds that their grievances include unfair coverage they have been receiving in the public media. But he says the real problem is the ballot paper.
The issue which is a red line and a deal breaker is the issue of the ballot paper. There can't be an election where there is no agreed ballot paper.
He adds that President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is widely known as ED, is complicit in tampering with the electoral process. He is ZANU-PF's candidate for president.
An inclusive, free and fair election is important. It is the only route to legitimacy. Without legitimacy and stability, there can never be economic recovery. But, as I already said, certain forces are threatening the attainment of that legitimacy. And of course, my brother, ED Mnangagwa's hands are not clean.
Chief among the culprits, according to Chamisa, is the Electoral Commission.
The fulcrum of a free and fair, credible election is a referee. You are currently watching the World Cup. It's clear that even in a World Cup, you obviously have to have an independent referee. In the context of our elections, it's important for ZEC to be a credible referee. They have not shown so. They are not willing to even show the capacity that they are credible.
Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political events. He says the MDC Alliance will not be able to stop the election.
The MDC has legitimate concerns that need to be addressed, obviously, the legitimate flaws within the election process.
I think it was a bit confusing. I think Chamisa is saying that
there won't be any elections if electoral reforms that the MDC Alliance is calling for don't happen. History has it differently. Every time that MDC has boycotted an election, they have been the one at the losing end of that election.
Chamisa says the opposition may be tempted to ask the African Union and the Southern African Development Community to handle the elections, but the primary option is for ZEC to address their grievances and hold urgent consultations with all stakeholders, including the ruling ZANU-PF, to map a way forward. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Twenty past the hour. You were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Islamist militants have been a major problem in Mali since at least 2012, when armed jihadists briefly took over the northern half of the country. But not all the young men who join armed groups in the region, including Islamist ones, are motivated simply by religion. According to researchers, many join armed groups for reasons that are practical, which, if addressed, could provide some solutions to conflict. Bram Postumus attended a recent conference on peace and security in Morocco's capital Rabat and has this report.
The United Nations family in Mali came out in force this week to mark what it called Blue Helmet Day, a day to honor the servicemen and women who put themselves in harm's way for peace. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was on hand to take part in the ceremonies. The UN mission in Mali has cost the lives of almost 100 military personnel and 172 people in all. It is the highest death toll of any ongoing UN peacekeeping mission in the world. There are 13,500 peacekeepers in Mali, and that's not all. The French have their Opération Barkhane, and the European Union trains Malian army personnel. And there's another peace mission on the horizon, G5, a force with soldiers from Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, Chad and Mauritania. Guterres went to see the G5 headquarters in central Mali on Wednesday.
Il y a énormément d'obstacles auxquels le Mali fait face. Il y a d'un côté cette convergence.
Speaking at the end of his visit, the UN Secretary General asked for more and predictable international financial support for the G5. The G5, he told reporters, is tasked with fighting terrorist movements and organized crime in the Sahel region and help protect the civilian population. But its financial situation is insecure. Mali's own soldiers are taking part in the fight against regional instability, but they are in great need of better equipment and better pay. Until they receive those things, Mali will depend heavily on foreign forces to protect its borders and its people. Guterres announced that those foreign forces, and especially the UN's mission to Mali, are working on measures to increase their own protection. The spectacular attack last April that severely damaged Timbuktu Airport, where MINUSMA has a base, was a stark reminder of how vulnerable these troops can be.
En même temps, c'est évident qu'il nous faut perfectionner la façon dont
the UN will install closed-circuit surveillance systems at the main base in Bamako, advanced warning systems and radar at some camps in the north. It will use sniffer dogs to find explosives, do extensive situational awareness training, and conduct more operations designed to secure terrain. Will this be enough? A lot depends on the amount of international support that will be available for Mali, MINUSMA, and the regional G5 Sahel force. Currently, there are serious shortfalls, and this poses future problems. As Guterres put it, a failed Mali is a danger not only for its neighbors, but for a region stretching from the Sahel, across the Mediterranean, and deep into Europe. He said that containing the terrorist problem is better than dealing with its effects. Bram Postumus for VOA News, Bamako.
24 years into democracy, South African workplaces are failing to adequately transform and diversify in terms of gender and race. That's according to the latest employment equity report, which was recently handed to the Labour Minister. Several of the worst offenders are major companies listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. From Johannesburg, Nadia Sami has the story.
Teresa was a pharmacy assistant. She was convinced her time for a promotion had come when a position opened up that perfectly suited her skill set. But she was shocked when a male colleague, who had fewer years' experience, was chosen instead.
About 10 years ago, we worked together in the same department, and I could do exactly the same job which he did. I covered for him when he was off, when he was on leave. I managed perfectly. But management still thought that because I'm female, I'm not capable of lifting heavy boxes. So the position was given to him, and of course he received a much higher salary than what I did.
Now, in 2018, it seems not much has changed. Labour Minister Mildred Oliphant says several major companies are not complying with equity laws, and some companies simply don't respect the Constitution. The latest study shows women like Teresa struggle to climb the workplace ladder. Men occupy over 66% of senior management positions. Roxanne De Marta Consalves is a transformation specialist at Strategy Labour Solutions.
It's also very sad to have witnessed how little they've changed, especially from a gender perspective. So putting race aside, if one actually looks at the statistics in terms of how many organisations have implemented a female senior board, and the productivity increases and the revenue increases they've experienced, they possibly are actually doing themselves a disfavor by not embracing transformation in its true spirit.
24 years since the fall of the racist apartheid regime, white people in South Africa still occupy about 68% of top management positions, and black South Africans fill more than 83% of the country's unskilled labor jobs. Consalves says the state can do more to enforce the law.
Governments allowed companies to develop their own employment equity plans as well as establish their own targets. However, they have definitely in the last two cycles taken more of a strict approach in the sense that they've increased the number of officials that they've appointed to be able to conduct inspections. And then over and above that, they've also started implementing fining structures for every contravention that occurs.
Consalves says in some cases, companies would rather pay fines than embrace transformation in the workplace.
The legislation becomes more and more complex. It becomes more and more costly to implement. If you don't have somebody constantly monitoring it, it's probably more cost effective just to pay the fine. However, that in itself breeds the expectation that it is okay just to pay for the law to turn a blind eye, which is essentially what South Africa is trying to do away with.
The figures look slightly better in government, where black Africans hold a little over 69% of the positions nationally. This increases to 75% in provincial governments. However, labour experts say on the whole, South African employers have a long way to go if the country is to live up to its nickname, the Rainbow Nation. For VOA, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhibid, Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the 31st African Union Summit underway in Mauritania. The 2018 theme is Winning the Fight Against Corruption, a Sustainable Path to Africa's Transformation.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.